Okay, let's see. First of all, this is Monday morning, the 20th of March, 2017. We have Shir next week, and that's it till after Pesach. I want to say hello to the students in front of me and to the many listening across the world. One minor correction here. I don't know which class I spoke about, Chicago with the baseball books, baseball autographs of Gedolei Yisrael, so-called.
Oh, yes.
So I just want to say I heard from a dear student in Chicago, and Ida Crown is a high school. I thought it's a whole elementary and high school, but evidently it's only a high school. And the person who runs the baseball part is Mr. Daniel Harris, who's the assistant dean. Mr. Harris is a graduate of the Academy and received a master's degree in education from Temple University. He's been on the Academy staff since 1979. Beginning in 1990, he was director of student activities, and he runs the Chesed program, several annual Shabbatonim. Since 1992, he's been associated principal, and that's where, when you come into his office and I see his picture and I talk, I remember he's the guy who gave me the ball to sign. And then I remember the house in which I was staying in Skokie. So my Talmud, the Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, came with a ball for me to sign. I called him, I already signed one ball. How many balls do you need here? Okay. Now, going back just to drop with what happened with Chaim Berlin and Bells, so my student Steve Gross went to the computer and did research, and I don't get a clear picture. All I can gather from the computer and all the bloggers and all that's being said is that there's tremendous enmity and even hatred, I hate to use that term, between Chaim Berlin and Bells. So something went very wrong there. One blogger claims, and again, when I say, welcome, gentlemen, when I say a blogger claims, there's no confirmation, there are no records here. But he says what happened with the Fruchthandler and Chaim Berlin was that the Belzer Rebbe had already bought up this area, unknown to Chaim Berlin, who only wanted a small area. And some person, I'll use the term Haredi looking person, sold Fruchthandler this lot land, we're talking with Chaim Berlin and North Jerusalem, and it was already sold. And he absconded, and of course Fruchthandler lost money. Now I have to tell you, this has happened time and again, both in America, both in Israel. In other words, we're very trusting. If you invite me to your home, I'm going to eat there. Why will I eat there? If I invite you, are you going to eat in my house? Why are you going to eat? Because we know each other. All right, now take it a step further. We're davening in the same shul together. This is actually a person that's sitting in jail now. He is a Lakewood graduate, a nice guy, frum guy, and he whispers in your ear, you know, I'm doing some good investments, I'm getting a good return. So you say to him, well, you know, be in touch Matzai Shabbos. Guy calls you Matzai Shabbos, and before you know it, you're doing business with them. I have a friend who lost, this is the minimum figure, I may be understating it, but $87 million for sure. A Ponzi scheme out of Lakewood. You've seen the name. He was sentenced to 25. I mean, this person is so stupid, so crooked, that when he was out in bail, he defrauded a bank. So they threw the book at him. I think he got 25 years plus. He's in jail now. And it's sad, but you see, I can understand the story. I end off with one more story where I actually was part of it. RCA was coming to Israel. And the people at this end, Rabbi Kowalski was here, Zichrono Levracha, if you remember Shalom Dov Kowalski from Hillcrest. So Shalom Dov Kowalski was making the arrangements, and he was working with a travel agent a person, I think it was a lady, but I may have, a frum person came on Aliyah from South America. It could be it was a man, I don't recall exactly. And I remember a dear student of mine, I'll even mention his name, you can check it out with him, Rabbi Dr. Daniel Rothenberg, if you recognize the name. Well, a big call, a fine call with Chacham Yerei Shemayim. It's no youngster today, my students, when I speak of students. I have to realize some of them already are in their 60s, pushing 70. But he is a well-known psychologist, the postgraduate, the DeWitt Institute, if you know him, they're very big in psychology. So I remember he was a youngster at the time. And he's come to Israel with his father, this RCA tour, and he says to me, Rebbe, it's the first time I'm coming to Israel. I don't have to shnor a place to stay. We're coming with the RCA, and we have a hotel. And believe it or not, the RCA arrives at the hotels in Jerusalem, Rabbinical Council of America. And they tell them, you have no reservation. What are you talking about? It turned out the person who made the reservations for Rabbi Kowalski absconded with the money. She went back to South America. Go and find her. You're following? If you find her, they're not going to extradite her over. So she ran off with a few $100,000. You can't extradite on that. So you see, it's very possible that Blogger is right. But one thing is for sure, that bad feeling remains, and it's part of history. I can't prove black and white what happened. No one wants to talk about it. But if you go online, you'll get a good feeling that things went wrong. Okay. Now, we were speaking, so that's correcting or adding material, I should say, to what I said a few weeks ago. Last week, we got involved in two very fascinating topics. Number one, when Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner came to America, the document I showed you is precious because it catches the seminary, the early 30s, the mid-30s, how Rabbi Kutner wanted to meet with Professor Louis Ginsberg. And it shows you that an institution like the seminary, it didn't become the seminary of today overnight. When you look back to 1886, or 1887, I should say, 1886 is when Eitz Chaim began. Yeshiva University is 1 year older than JTS. When you go back to 1887 and you look at the charter for the seminary, there is nothing in that charter that we wouldn't sign on. It mentions Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh and loyalty to tradition. Beautiful charter. Who would dream where the seminary is today that they just voted, not just voted, a tremendous plurality, the United Synagogue, that Goyim can be members of the shuls. Yeah, by the way, it had ripples in Israel too. I wasn't the only one who was flabbergasted. I saw in the weekend papers and the weekend freebies, but they don't realize the full impact because there's so much intermarriage in America that if the temples don't open it to the non-Jewish spouses, they're not going to have any members. So could you imagine the conservative movement? Now, we're one step away. I don't have to be a big giant to tell you we're one step away when the rabbinical assembly will permit its rabbis to perform intermarriages. That's the next step. And you already have. One rabbi was thrown out and he performed an intermarriage for his own child. And he was thrown out and he says, they're throwing me out, but I can give you a long list of names of rabbis who want to do it. So you see, it's a long, long process. But one thing is for sure. In 1935, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik writes a letter to Professor Ginsberg with such awe, right or wrong, and he says, he calls him the Gadol Hadar, and please accept and meet with Yitzchak Kutner, who's a young man with a brilliant mind and a great Talmud Chacham. You'll enjoy meeting him. That reflects. It reflects on Rabbi Kutner, reflects on Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and it reflects on Professor Ginsberg. Yeah, what do you want to say?
The shul that I served just recently before I retired, they have an interesting thing that if the woman or the man is Jewish, they are a member. But the non-Jew is not a member. But if they want to become a member, they can't become a member. So they charge them half dues. So I don't know why somebody would want to pay extra. They're not coming anyway.
They're not coming anyway, but they're half dues.
The problem is, if they now are accepted as members, they say that no one will, it won't happen, but it will happen.
Yeah, of course.
They will become president of the show.
No. It's so easy,
they can convert. It's easy enough for them to convert.
It's inevitable. But that document is fabulous. And this is the way life works. This is why I'm so conservative when it comes to halacha. And I got this from the Rav. If anyone knew the Rav, you know, everyone writes about the Rav today and talks about the Rav today and gives lectures. Is the Rav is Soloveitchik relevant in the 21st century? Understand? Could you imagine no titles? It's like the Rambam, Maimonides. I'll say Maimonides. All right, Maimonides. You have to say Rabbi Maimonides. But the Rav, his Talmidim are alive. We're sitting in this room. His family is alive. How do you hear Soloveitchik relevant? But you see, the Rav, if you knew the Rav, he was so conservative when it came to halacha. Reb Moshe was infinitely more liberal than the Rav in halacha. Right or wrong? I remember when I learned in Lakewood, you have to know Yiddish to appreciate this, when I learned in Lakewood, so they used to say, Reb Moshe Matetzich. Reb Moshe, it's a double intenda. Reb Moshe, he tires himself out by being Mekil. You follow? This was in Lakewood, and that's the famous story I'll never forget. It's unbelievable what you see in life. But I'm walking in Lakewood. All of Lakewood was in two little buildings, two converted houses, in my time at least. So the dormitory, there was the base medrash, the dorm. So I'm coming back to the dorm, and a kid is standing on the stairway. So I tell him, I asked him, what are you standing here for? He says, I'm keeping lookout. I think they used the word, he was playing chicky or something like that. Keeping lookout. So I say, what are you keeping lookout? He says, for the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva who slept on the second floor coming up to his room. I said, what's going on that you're worried about the Rosh Yeshiva? He said, oh, my friend is shaving. So you understand what he was telling me. His friend, everyone in Lakewood shaved with the depilatory powders. Do you remember that powder? You put it on and when you used to use when a toothbrush came in, 9 minutes later you took it off like this. If you left it on for 10, 12 minutes, you wouldn't have a face left. You had to take it off exactly 8, 9 minutes later. It smelled. So he was shaving with an electric shaver. So I said, what's the problem? He says, well, Reb Moshe is Matia, but Reb Aaron Cutler is not. You follow? So this already shows you Reb Moshe Matetzich, but he didn't want Reb Aaron. So I always wondered what would happen if he finished shaving half his face and Reb Aaron comes up and the other half isn't finished. And there I can tell you, it actually happened in Rabbi Volk's shiur. We had Jerry Wahlberg. I was in the shiur. There were four Wahlberg brothers, I believe. All their father was a very prominent Rav in Borough Park. Harry Wahlberg, fabulous speaker. You had these were giants of sermonics and homiletics. And all four sons became rabbis, if I'm not mistaken. So Jerry was in Rabbi Volk's shiur. He was a year ahead of me in college, but we were together in Rabbi Volk's shiur. So he was a wise guy. So Jerry, Far Purim, shaved half his face. And he sits right in front of Rav Volk, and he turns the face like this. It's as Rav Volk said, that he's clean shaven. A minute later, he's like this. He's there with a beard. All right, those were the days. Anyway, that's the seminary and Rav Hutna. Rav Hutna obviously doesn't wind up in the seminary, and this is what we came to last week, and we're going to come to the heart of it today in something just overwhelming. Now, this two volumes came out, I spoke about it last time. These are the two volumes that Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik, Rav Hagon, he's really a very unique individual, put out on his father. He's one of the six Rav Aaron's six children. He's in the middle. And he was very close to his father. And as I mentioned last week, he suffered more than anyone when the father took ill and all the machloikit, what went on with the Haredim, with Tells, with the mikveh. I can't go into all the details now. I will go into the details. God should spare me in my Sunday class. At a certain point, I'll reach it down the line. But Rabbi Aaron, as you know, had a lot of heartache in Chicago. Number one, he comes to Chicago and he gets involved. By the way, one of the people who was his antagonist just died on Shabbos. I believe it was on Purim. He died on Purim. Seymour Abrams, the Abraham program here is, he funds. The OU Center he funds. And he was very big in Skokie. And he was one of the Mizrahi leaders, and they sold the old shul in the changing neighborhood to, I think it was a Buddhist temple. Rabbi Aaron was opposed, a lot of aggravation. Rabbi Aaron then left Skokie, founded Brisk, and Rabbi Aaron had a lot of heartache because, I'm using popular terminology, but the Haredi world started attacking him, criticizing him. How can you establish a Brisk Yeshiva, and it's going to interfere with fundraising for Yerushalayim? And Rabbi Aaron said, what does one have to do with the other? I'm a Brisk, I'm a Soloveitchik, I have a right to the name Brisk like any other Soloveitchik. This is Yerushalayim, this is Chicago. Had a lot of Akmas Nefesh, and then he got involved with they built the mikveh. General Community of Federation built the mikveh in Chicago, a state-of-the-art mikveh. So the conservative, and it was built under Orthodox auspices. So the conservatives and the Kveis, maybe even Reform, wanted to use it for conversion. And Rabbi Aaron said they can't use it because if they use it, they'll boast that they converted the people in an Orthodox fashion. They went to an Orthodox mikveh. And there was a tremendous fight. And it's a very delicate question because the general community built the mikveh. How can you stop the general community from using it? On the other hand, there is very clearly a problem here, an implication. We did an Orthodox conversion when, of course, there was no real Kabbalat mitzvah and all that goes with it. It's a very delicate question.
Ironically, the woman or the man, would they be considered Jewish?
You'd have to know a lot more. I had that Sheila Halacha L'maisa, and I spoke in great depth with the Rav on it. I'll put it this way. I had a case where there was a conversion with a conservative rabbi who was a Shomer Shabbos.
Oh,
you follow me? He was a Shomer Shabbos. So Halacha L'maisa, I'll tell you, I'm quoting the Rav, it rings in my mind so many decades later. The Rav said at the end of our whole discussion, you can't say that they didn't do something. You follow? So the Rav told me the obvious answer to reconvert the kid again, which I did. And then, lahalacha, he's totally Jewish. But I'll never forget the Rav's words, you can't say he did nothing. Because there was a beitin there, and there was mikveh, and there was some concept of Kabbalat mitzvah. The rabbi himself was a Shomer Shabbos. It was that type of conservative generation. Anyway, be it as it may, in Chicago, some of you know, Tells in Cleveland ultimately fell apart. Anyone who's been to Cleveland, anyone who's been to the suburb, anyone who knows, good luck, Yomo, in what your sacred task this morning. So, he teaches the Ukraine and he teaches Siberia over the internet from Shvat Ami. He's going to Shvat Ami now. That's why I don't let him come to class. He has to have responsibility to Shvat Ami. So, Baruch Hashem. Anyway, be it as it may, he has native Russian. You understand the advantage. When we taught in English or Hebrew. He speaks their language. So, he's fabulous. He's, excuse me?
Real good impact.
Yeah, no, thank God. I've done a little good in my life. Let's hope, let this continue. Be'ezrat Hashem. I just feel bad. He's not married. You know what I'm saying? He has to mature, and I try to do, and we're living in a terrible world. In other words, in our days, when we looked at a girl, all we were concerned with is Shomeret Shabbat. Shomeret Shabbat, fine. Today, the hashkafa has to be, if it's not Haredit or not Zionit Datit, you know, it's like two different worlds. We're Jews, we're Shomrei Torah, work out a marriage. So it's not exactly your thinking. Why?
It's like a Rebbe Feinman
said. Don't ask too many questions. I'm letting off enough steam, and I let off steam. If you listen to yesterday's shiur, read between the lines. I give a certain example there, you'll understand. Anyway, coming back here. So, tells, without going into detail, I lectured on this extensively many, many years ago, decades ago. You see, the Litvishi Yeshiva have one tremendous problem. They are family-owned. When something is family-owned, so in order to be a Rosh Yeshiva, you have to be part of the family. You either are a son or a son-in-law or a grandson. You know what's going on in Panovich today. And the tremendous machloket between a grandson and a grandson-in-law. It's family-owned. But you have to have the ability. This is not Hasidus. If you're a Lubavitcher or you're a Satma or you're a Bavava, you pass it on to your children. It doesn't matter who the Rebbe is. The Rebbe represents the present Gera Rebbe doesn't speak in public. Are you aware of that? He does not speak in public. He if I bring, there's a tish, there's everything, they sing, doesn't speak. That, no, could you imagine we're going to have a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva who doesn't speak in public? He'll have no Talmidim. A Rebbe can continue. No one says that a Chveis, for the sake of argument, the Mittler Rebbe, if you're a Chabadnik, you know what I'm talking about, the second Rebbe called the Mittler. He's in the middle between the first, the Baal Tanya, and the Tzemach Tzedek. He wasn't as big as his father. He wasn't as big as his son. He was in the middle. But it doesn't matter. He perpetuated it. He passed it on. But Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, you got to have the goods to deliver. So in Tells, ultimately when Rabbi Sarutskin died and Rabbi Gifter died and then Rabbi Sarutskin died, it didn't have the quality. The greatness of YU is that a dummy like myself can teach in the name of YU and be Mabitz Torah. Why? Because I have what to give. You have what to give. You're going to have students. Doesn't matter who you're married to. Yes. Now, 50 years after I do my doctorate, I find out I have the biggest yichus of anyone in YU. Rabbi Rebel was my cousin. No, does anyone equal that yichus? Come on. 50 years later, I find out. What does that have to do? Or you take Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. I once punched someone in the face. He says, yeah, Rabbi Aaron became Rosh Yeshiva because he married the Rav's daughter. I said, you idiot. Rabbi Aaron was a shame dover when he was a kid of 14 already. Are you aware of that? He sat in the Chaim Berlin Beis Medrash. He graduated high school at 14. 2 years he sat in the Beit Medrash, went through Shas. He remembered every word of Shas until his final years. I don't think he went through Shas again, Al HaSeva, like those 2 years, 14 to 16. So, in the Litvisha world where it's owned by the family. So what happened was Cleveland actually fell apart. I was in Cleveland, Wycliffe. It's a suburb. They have a whole little city there. There's no one there. The Beis Medrash is the saddest site. A Beis Medrash built for hundreds and hundreds. There's a big wall, and you have 25 students sitting in front, and that's it. Chicago and Riverdale caught on, the branches of Tells. And Riverdale is very stark, but Chicago tells Mamish owns the city. They're one of the most powerful forces in the city. So they were in favor of the mikvah, letting the Reform conservative use, don't interfere. They, Federation paid for it. We can't stop them. Shalom bayit. And there was a tremendous machloket. Rabbi Aaron suffered tremendously. Now, more than any other child, in my opinion, Yosef was at home then. His older brothers were out of the house. His younger brother was not yet of age, but he was a teenager. He suffered tremendously, Rabbi Yosef. And he saw his father suffering. And he has dedicated his life to perpetuating his father's Torah. Now, as I mentioned last time, if you can buy the volumes, buy them now, because the right wing already has put them into Chayrim, etc. And it's the first volume is English Hebrew mixed together. It needs editing, but there's a world of fabulous material. Now, what we have here, beginning on page 20.
Why was it put into Chayrim?
Yeah. You don't know the Haredi world, my friend. If you do something, if you come up with a new patent towards solving certain problems in Shiva Nikiyam, and you come up with a new patent, and someone decides Kadash Hashom in HaTorah, the next step is you'll see a Haramat up on the wall that some dummies from Yeshiva University came up with a new idea. They think they can solve problems that the Achronim haven't solved. Kadash Hashom in HaTorah, and they're just a bunch of wise guys and they don't know what Torah is all about. And we thereby declare anything they come up with is totally chutz l'tchum. You don't know what goes on in this world.
That's not necessarily so significant.
Gentlemen, don't argue with me. That's the fact. When these books came out,
qualification. Just because a bunch of mishuganas do that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Alex,
it only means something. Alex,
you're telling me that. The way I live, you don't have to tell me that. I live that way. I'm not impressed by you. I'm only impressed by Gedolei Torah and Tzaddikim Yesodei Olam.
I'm making the point that you shouldn't be judging the whole Haredi Olam by the fact that
there are
I'm
not judging.
People like
no,
that.
No, I'm
Everything
not.
Everything goes by the lowest common denominator.
Now, Alex, God forbid I'm not judging. You know better than that. But I'm explaining, he's wondering why Rabbi Yosef's volumes is previous. You don't know what's going on.
He's different than YU.
It's not because he's YU. He never went to YU. He never spent a minute in YU. But he criticizes certain aspects of the Haredi world. So certain aspects of the Haredi world, and I'll say it more carefully so Alex won't get upset. Certain aspects of the Haredi world will put him in Chayram. That's where the Sfarim, I told you what happened. The Girso is selling his Sfarim, and a guy walks in and says, how many copies do you have? He says, I have 25 sets. I'm going to buy them all on condition you don't take any more to be sold. And the person in Girso refused. Anyway, coming back here, beginning on page 21, he quotes, I don't know when, all I can think is maybe this was said after Rav Hutner died, a fabulous talk that the Baron Soloveitchik gives on Rav Hutner. And this talk says it all. And as we said last week, he spoke about Rav Hutner. How does he come to Rav Hutner? I gave you the background last time we met. How does he come to Rav Hutner? And that's the story with Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He's quite unhappy in Warsaw. He's having a bitter battle with Professor Meir Balaban, and he finally gets the offer to come to America. He agrees to come to America. The consul doesn't let him go right away because he had an ingrown toenail operation. He arranges for Rav Hutner, who had just come back from Palestine, to tutor Rebaron, his 12-year-old son, Aaron Arla Soloveitchik, tutor him when I'm going to be gone. And Reb Aaron gets to meet Rav Hutner. They form a relationship already in Warsaw. Within a few months' time, Reb Aaron leaves Warsaw, goes to America. And here he writes about Rav Hutner. Yossi writes that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, my grandfather, he's the one that got Rav Hutner into RJJ. He's the one that got Rav Hutner to start Matifta Chai in Berlin. And he writes about Rav Hutner. He takes the Gemara that we quoted last week. We ended off the Shir, the Gemara in Chagiga. It's also Mayit Katan, based upon a pasuk in Malachi. Im harav dome lamalach Hashem tzvakat dome. If a Rebbe resembles a malach, then you can learn Torah from him. If not, you can't learn Torah. And Rav Aaron says, what does it mean, dome? What does the word Doma mean? No one can be like Hashem Tzvakot. We're human beings. What does it mean? An angel, a Rebbe. And Reb Aaron says so beautifully that what's very important in the Talmud-Rebbe relationship is that the Talmud should think the Rebbe is a Malach. If you don't worship the ground your Rebbe walks on, then he calls the relationship parasitic. You're a parasite. You're taking Torah from the Rebbe, but you really don't appreciate him. You really don't admire him. You really don't look up to him. And he says, the Talmidim of Rav Hutner looked up to him like he was a malach. This was their feeling. No one can really be a malach, but the Talmidim had awe, reverence, appreciation. And Rav Aaron says, I'm not a chassid, but in order to understand chassidus, a Belza chassid will tell you his Rebbe is a malach. A Lubavitcher chassid will tell you his Rebbe is a malach. If a chassid doesn't feel that way, then his relationship with his Rebbe is faulty. It's not perfect. It's not wholesome. And he says, Rav Hutner, I looked up to him. Now we go further.
A friend of mine pointed out that one of the reasons, in his estimation, why Rav Hutner was not successful in the Israeli scene was because this whole idea of like having his Talmidim be like Hasidim, and he's like the Rebbe, and that just did not work here.
You're right, there's a lot of truth to it, but we're not there yet. We'll come to the Israeli scene at the very end. But let me come back here. The Gemara in Shabbos, I'm citing Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Every word I'm saying for the rest or most of the shiur today, it's not mine, it's not Yosef. We're citing Rav Aaron Soloveitchik.
What's the source in Shabbos?
Shabbos Daf Kutyud Bet Amid Bet, 112b. And you all know this Gemara, we all quote it 1,000 times over. Anyone who's learned Musa, heard Rabbi Yisrael Salanta speak, Im harishonim kamalachei hasharet, anu kivnei adam. Im harishonim kivnei adam, anu kachamorim, v'afilo lo kachamash apikas ben yair. Remember, we couldn't eat food, straw, that was nishka maisid, that truma and maisid were not taking off. So we all know this Gemara. And the Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, of course, made it very famous. I quote Rabbi Yisrael to you. And we all know this feeling. Who are we? What are we? I'm teaching. I'm sitting here teaching. Oh, Ribbono Shel Olam, I sat in front of the Rav. How can we make a comparison? So Rabbi Yisrael used to say, there's no question we're not like our teachers. There's no question we've gone down. There's no question that the best we're humans, perhaps we're only donkeys. What gives us the right to teach? So Israel said, in our youth, we saw great people. This gives us the right to teach. And it's a very powerful thought. And Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik takes this Gemara and he develops it that when you have a Rebbe, in your eyes, the Rebbe has to be like a Malach. If a Talmud considers a Rebbe, the Rishonim, our forerunners, our Rebbeim from the previous generation, as Malachei HaSharet, then L'chol HaPachot, the Talmud can reach the Madrega of a human being. But if the Talmud is so critical and so objective, and he starts criticizing his Rebbe, and he says the Rebbeim from the previous generation have had weaknesses though different than the ones we have, we shouldn't glorify them. It is not right, not scientific, not hero worship. If the young generation says that about the old generation, that they also were human beings with frailties. Then the result will be the Talmud will not even attain the level of the human being. He will sink to the level of a behema or a chamar. Gentlemen, I want to tell you, this little paragraph that I just read is so insightful and so powerful. And let me expand it and introduce you to a different source. Look, we're trying to plant Torah to keep Torah alive in the Western world. We have challenges daily. We're living in a world, could you imagine, where I could be arrested in New York for speaking out and saying homosexuality is not normative. Okay, just think what I just said. Just think what's going on in Israel with the army, where they feature showing soldiers, couples, married, trying to attract good minds for careers in the IDF, and they show two homos living together in the Air Force. This just happened. And there was an outcry. They look at them. A person was just fired in what city? Herzliya. It's headline news right now as we speak. Someone on the city council spoke out against books where they paint for children homosexual, lesbian couples, totally normative. Kabbalat Shabbat parties. One week you have a man and a woman, one week you have two men, one week you have two women. God have mercy. This is normal. Normal. Look what's going on with the army right now. You don't realize. I think I'm the only one in the room who served in the army. Yitzchak too. Charlie, we did basic. You did basic? I did basic. David Miller didn't do basic. Our listening didn't do basic. They served, but I did basic, and then I served. You got to understand what the army is. Boys and girls together in a tank. Let me tell you a true story. By the way, what was given out Shabbos in the shuls, I gave out two copies yesterday, they're gone, of Rabbi Tal's talk on this very topic from Har Mor. Fabulous. You see the stories he tells. But I can tell you one story I know, what we're talking about. Soldiers, God, Hebron, the heart of Hebron. From people, good people, Shabbos, Friday night, people who were there from the day one, from the 80s. And they're making kiddush, they're eating, and they feel bad. They're two soldiers on the roof. So, the wife says, bring them up some cake, some drink. The guy goes up to the roof. It's a boy and a girl on God duty. I don't want to continue the story. And this is while they're on God duty. I said, this is high schools in Israel. If they're giving out prophylactics in New York, why not in Tel Aviv? Understand? So we have a tremendous struggle. Not everyone has all the answers. It's very easy to be critical. And we know, we hear people critical of this, critical of that one. He's too frum, he's not frum enough, he doesn't know what he's saying. If he would live in the real world, you can give you can come back from Shul Shabbos. The rabbi gave a drasha. No, the rabbi gave a drasha. No one knows at all, no one can say it all. There's plenty of room, you can argue, you can fight. All right. I want to tell you, when you're overly critical, you create tragedy. We're all human beings. No one has the perfect answer. The Rav didn't have an answer that was perfect for everyone. The Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't have an answer that was perfect for everyone. None of us have totally succeeded. All right, you want to talk that? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, I believe no one has his track record of success. But no one has a perfect answer. You have to be careful in your criticisms. I'm very hesitant to criticize others. I disagree at my own point of view. No one had, you heard me say 10,000 times over the last 58 years, if anyone had the perfect point of view that everyone would remain a Shomer Torah mitzvah, I would be the first one to step on line. If I have to wear a shtreimel, everyone put on a shtreimel. Believe me, no problem.
What if...
I haven't finished. Listen carefully.
A book, I'm not going to get away with that. Saying this comment.
A book came out by Alan Dershowitz. And you got to understand who Alan Dershowitz, where he's coming from. My best friend was his best friend, Tzvi Groner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Tzvi and Alan always mentions him in his books. Alan Dershowitz mentions my student, Jacques Zemelman, in Chutzpah a number of times, etc., etc. I'm not alien to Alan Dershowitz, the way he was raised. I once quoted from Chutzpah in a talk I gave in Cedarhurst, big, beautiful, wealthy young Israel. It must be 20 years ago, and after the talk, a lady comes over to me with her friend, Rabbi Rakefet. We enjoyed your talk, but we were disappointed. How do you quote the volume Chutzpah? The author is a Machalal Shabbos, etc. And after this lady finishes reprimanding me, she pauses and says, by the way, he's my son. So I want to tell you, Alan Dershowitz just came up with a new book about law cases he's had. In the start of the book, he has a memoir of his own life. And there's one paragraph there that everyone in the world should be familiar with. And he admits he became an apocryphalist, he went off the path. came from such an elegant religious family, had such a good chinuch, but he said his mother, he had a very bright mother. You don't become Alan Dershowitz with parents of only 110 IQ. His mother's IQ probably was 150, very bright mother. And she would come back from shul every Shabbos morning and criticize the rabbi, take apart his sermon, criticize the rabbi. He said that criticism may ultimately be responsible for what became of him. I have to tell you, that's a very insightful thought. And Rabbi Aaron here is very powerful. If you're going to criticize, if the Rebbe's not a malach, look, the Rav was not a malach. What can I tell you? I don't want to say, a chassid may say the Rebbe really believes the Rebbe's a malach. I can't argue. There are stories with the Lubavitcher Rebbe where you see Ruach HaKodesh, a Litvat, Rav Steinsaltz, who's a very normal, down-to-earth person. When you read his biography, unlike Miller and unlike Plushkin, he says the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh, Pshuto K'mashmo. All right, I know the Rav would say, I don't ever, but I hold like this. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I grew up in a different world. But when you're critical and critical and critical, then if you could, if the Rebbe made mistakes, no, I can have my own point of view. I'm smarter, I can try. I might make mistakes, but maybe I'll make less. And here Rebbe Aaron is beautiful. You see, this concept, when you sit before a Rebbe, a Rav, a Rosh Yeshiva, has to be like a malach. If you don't have that feeling, you're not going to have the true Yirat Shemayim and surrender. And magnificent. He says, the Talmidim of Rav Chutna, they had this feeling. HaRav Domeh L'Malach, underline the word Domeh. If the earlier generation are malachim, then we can be b'nei adam, b'nei temutah. But if the earlier generation are normal human beings, they hit home runs and at times they struck out, at times they were bright, at times they made mistakes. No, if they can be like that, alachat kama v'kama, we can be like that. Wow, this is his description of Rav Chutna. But we're not finished. Here he reaches a crescendo. In a minute you can see the relationship that they had. There was no other, you'll hear what Rav Aaron has to say about his relationship with Rav Chutna. Yeah, what did you want to say, Alex?
Yeah, which is, you're saying nobody has a solution to
everything. I just want to tell all the people listening, Alex is a Wexner fellow. So you have to understand when he speaks, it's with a little bit more authority than the average student. Okay. Wexner fellow. Yes, Alex.
Yes. You can say that it's 100% true that every group has flaws. Every group has... No one has a perfect solution.
Perfect solution.
We're in Gaulis. We have it right. But you also have to look at things and be intellectually honest. And I want to quote a study that Nathan and I heard from Rabbi David Aaron, which right. I heard many years ago. Also,
David Aaron from the Old City?
Yes.
My student. No, give me credit for
raising this. I didn't know that he studied.
Please, ask him. Check.
Okay.
Hope he's not ashamed of his Rebbe.
I'm sure he's not.
That's not to call me a malach, but I can tell you, when Adam is a student, he wasn't yet who he was to become. Baruch Hashem.
But so he quoted a study. This was something that was done by guys in the Dati Lumi world who saw many of their classmates and their chevra going off the derech.
Right,
and
correct.
He said that the off the derech rate in the Haredi world was 1 out of 10, which is significant, and it was 4 out of 10 in the Dati Lumi world. So, and I've said things like that to you before, and you've been very resistant to acknowledge that point. And I think you have to acknowledge it and be honest.
So, yeah, what are you trying to say? That
I'm trying to say that that the success rate is much higher there
in the Haredi.
Very,
world.
Very significant. You quote that line from the Rav. We don't planes crash, but we don't plot. We still fly.
But right?
if the plane crash, no one would get on a plane if 5% of the plane crashed. If 40% of the planes crash.
I hear what you're saying. And you know who the Rav told that line to? You're aware?
Yeah, right. The plane crashed.
No, that's
and
before.
That line is always quoted by people who say, "No, you can go study API courses in university. You have to be open-minded."
Alex, and then... Alex, I will only say the following. I from my own life experience, I see both Tzionim Datiim throw it away and I see Haredim throw it away. I don't know who has more. To me, it seems equal, but you might be right. Tzionim Datiim live in two worlds, the Haredim don't, so they have more exposure. On the other hand, I have to tell you, a lot of the Tzionim Datiim who throw it away come back, belay v'nefesh. They go, they sow their oats, and they come back. And with the Haredim, you have certain, God have mercy, books that have been written that I don't have to quote. You understand?
But you're talking about former Sama, former Square. But if you feel.
If you feel that the Haredi world has a higher percentage, Adarabba the Adarabba, then be Haredi, belay v'nefesh.
No, but it's not about me. I don't care. That's not the point.
But you have
to do honest accounting, and the bottom line is that there's a lot of shitas that are very, very flawed, and there's a lot of cognitive dissonance around this thing where people are overlooking.
Okay, I can't argue if that's the research. Zomun Zayn Haredim. But I have to tell you, in my world, Tzionim Datiim, in my extended family, what I see is magnificent.
Yeah, but that's a very small sample. You have a nice family.
Between myself and my brother, we're dealing with a few hundred souls. So it's not so small anymore. But what I see is magnificent. Segut and Salait, my brother's family, I can tell you, either they're learning, and they're big in learning, or they're big in the army. There's nothing is tolerated that's not total success.
Well, it also might be important to make sub-distinctions and to say that those people who are so-called hardal might be have a higher success rate. And maybe if you really are committed to religious Zionism, you have to choose a more...
But okay, I know I have a grandson, I look for a shidduch, and whenever I mention the girl has to cover her head, period. Okay, let's come back here. And let's come back to Rav Hutna. Now, here in this paragraph, after describing Harav Domel Malach, and after describing Im Harishonim Kuv Malachim, here he describes Rav Hutna. And this description, if you want to be a Rebbe, you want to teach Torah, you have to have this ability. If you don't have it, become an accountant, a lawyer, a fireman, a policeman, a sanitation person, don't become a rabbi. And he says, Rav Hutna had that koach, the capacity of captivating the imagination of young Talmidim. I don't know why. First of all, he had an unusually effervescent personality. When he talked, even in a private conversation, it was kol atzmotai tomana. He had an effervescent, turbulent personality, and he had a magnetic personality. He was able to prevail and to influence just by talking to a Talmud in Milei D'Alma, secular matters. He was a person with such a captivating and effervescent personality when he taught me, a young child of 12 years old. And at that time, Rav Hutna himself was very young, so that he had a tremendous impact on me. How Rav Hutna was youthful even at old age. Even after his experience as a hostage in Jordan, he still retained his vigor, his vivaciousness, his cheerfulness. Alaka Kama Bakama, when he was 24 years old, when he was my Rebbe. He was so effervescent and so youthful and so vigorous that I was able to adopt and to acquire some of the youthful features of Rav Hutna. Because of that, even though I am the oldest Talmud of Rav Hutna, in a certain sense, I am the youngest Talmud, more than anyone else. On one hand, I am the Talmud Makashisha, the eldest, but at the same time, Mayanuka, the youngest. And this is a beautiful description of a rabbi. The personality, the charisma, the ability to teach, the ability to excite. And when you look at the great rabbeim, you take Hasidic rabbeim, you look at the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what's the first trait that comes across? No, look at the videos of the Fabrengen. The Rebbe would start to wave his hand, thousands of voices would intensify. The Rebbe, when he was younger, we have videos of this, he would get up and start to clap and like dance around in his own little spot. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands would be just invigorated, empowered. This is charisma. The Rav, you talk about the Yotzeit Shir. Everyone writes about the Yotzeit Shir. If you didn't experience, there's no way for you to feel it. It was Lav Me'alma Hadein. Plain and simple. Could you imagine a bus of a dumb would sit 4.5 hours in his younger days stand, give a shir, halacha, agada, inspiring the people? You can't imagine the feeling. Here, you would be 3.5 hours into the shir, and the Rav would have that ploy, soll ich gehen weiter? Soll ich gehen weiter? Should I go further? And thousands of voices, everyone, no one wanted to leave. You felt when you left the yard, I remember, I have a Talmud, Rabbi Fuchs, Moshe Fuchs, maybe some of you recognize the name. He works in Kashrut, he has a shul that he continues his father's shul in the Bronx, Rabbi Moshe Fuchs. One of my eldest Talmudim, the early 60s we're talking about. His father was a European Rav, a survivor. So I remember one time the Yotzeit Shir ended, it began at 8 o'clock, it finished 12:30. We were on the bus together going back to the Bronx, the 36 bus. And he was a European who yet saw Gedolim in Europe. He was an American kid who saw nothing in his life. And here we're talking on the bus, we were like flying in the air, Maimed Har Sinai, Pshuto Kamashma'o, and that has to be a Rebbe. Yeah? If you can't excite, if you don't have the charisma, if you're just teaching mathematics or biology or chemistry or psychology, don't be a Rebbe. Torah is not psychology, Torah is not mathematics. Torah's Devar Hashem, you're imbuing the next generation, you're creating the Malachim for the next generation, you're creating the people who saw Malachim in their youth, and our Rebbe, Doma the Malach. What a description of Rav Hutna. And this is every Rebbe. I have to say, these words, you can quote and re-quote, it applies to any good Rebbe has to have this ability. Okay, you can see how Rav Aaron loved Rav Hutna. What was the strength of Rav Hutna? And then Rav Aaron goes further. And here I have to tell you, he's saying exactly what the Rav said so many times. A lot has been said, the rebirth of Torah in America, where we stand today, that Jason Greenblatt that's being criticized, which you heard yesterday, Shir, criticized right in this room, criticized elsewhere, go online, look at the websites. Here, a Talmud of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rav Yehuda Amital, a Yeshiva University graduate, a man who lives in Teaneck, always wears a big black kippah, and suddenly he appears in Israel without a kippah. And they asked me my opinion.
Most people the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Come to him, you put on a kippah, and here he takes it off, and dafka, he should have worn the kippah to go see Arafat's people. It would have been very important to wear a kippah. I'm not happy, believe me.
Everyone's
criticized him in our world. Has he commented? He probably doesn't wear a kippah when he goes to work, you know, the people, lawyers, I have one student.
They say that he does.
He wears the
Washington. He wears
the kippah that
he's all the time. That Alaka Kama Kama
should have worn a kippah.
Unlike those like Lieberman.
Right, who didn't wear a kippah.
Didn't wear it.
Right,
once
in public.
They only wear it in shul.
So anyway, it hurts. But look where we're at. That Greenblatt is a Shomrei Shabbos. That the president's son-in-law and daughter is Shomrei Shabbos. That the New York Times has to swallow so hard. Torah is around. Jewish identity is around. Look what the Lubavitcher Rebbe ago. Who could ever dream this? Now, the question is, how did this come about? And, you know, a lot of people talk about 1945, the DPs, 46, the Shanghai crowd, the Rebbeim. It all begins after World War II. Well, the truth of the matter, I don't have to tell you, Chaim Soloveitchik's magnum opus, Rupture and Reconstruction, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. Reb Chaim makes the point, you know, that there was a total rupture here and it had to be reconstructed, and this is why people no longer know how much matzah to eat, Leil HaSeder. They have to hold a chart in front of them and measure the matzah. You know, I showed the chart once in class, measure the marah, and he said, this was never a problem before in Europe. You knew how much your father ate, how much your grandfather ate. You saw with your own eyes. Here, eruption, reconstruction. All right, this debate can go on endlessly. I have to say, as someone who's lived, my family's in America since 1900, and my own research, my wife's family since 1870, and my research, and what I know. So I have to say, basically, my classmate, Professor Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, known as the Dr. Grach, basically he's right. There was rupture and reconstruction, no two ways about it. There was a remnant that survived. No two ways about it. As you recall, there were attacks on Ephraim's scholarship, appeared in Torah Mother Journal against the tradition article at the time. But there's truth on both sides. But when you describe the picture, I believe Ephraim has it right. There was a small percentage. You take the Tarragon family. They're in America from when? The 1920s? And everyone in the families, the Shemit Torah Medrash, so there were families that survived. Okay. The Rav, and here you'll see Rav Aaron says exactly the same thing. They were very, very critical of the from Jews here in America, because the Rav would say, you see, these from Jews came to America, and they made up their mind, America's different. America, you can't have from kids, you can't have from grandchildren. I remember my father used to tell me that he would ask his mother, and his mother, my grandmother, I didn't really know her. She died when I was a year and a half, 2 years old. But in retrospect, I find out from members of the family, she was a tzaddikit, and I had a great, I write about her in Washington. If you know Dr. Josh Daniel, the dentist, Josh is a great-grandson. His great-grandmother was my grandfather, was my grandmother's aunt. And the only home she would eat in, his great-grandmother was the mum of the family, she would eat in my grandmother's home. And my grandmother said it was a tzaddeket. So one time my father asked her, how does she feel seeing her children living like Goyim? One, two, what went on in America? Three, is Nishta Kan Shabbos, and the whole cave-in. We're talking, you know, the 1920s, the 1930s, but 1920s. And she would say, her attitude was, the Ribbono Shel Olam then kev yada goy, the Ribbono Shel Olam sustains any non-Jew, so he'll sustain these Jews who go off the path. And in general, many people had that attitude. When the Rav opened up Maimonides, and you know, Shulamit Meisman writes about this, I quote the Rav talking about it, when he opened up Maimonides, the greatest opposition came from Jews. Your son will go, you want me to send my son to a parochial school? He won't learn English, he won't learn mathematics. What will he be, a rabbi? He'll never make a living. And that was the attitude. It was a totally negative attitude that there's no hope to establish Torah in America. So here, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, he does it with Divrei Torah. He says, He quotes, it's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Peihei Amid Aleph. See, I found the sources. What I feel bad about is all this should have been edited so that automatically you would have the sources. And the Gemara talks about, it's a pasuk in Pashat Vayishlach. I'll quote the pasuk to you. Eile b'nei seyeh achari yoshvei ha'aretz lopim b'shovel v'tzivon v'ana yoshvei ha'aretz yoshvim koldim sheba esav l'sham. And it describes, the Torah describes, these people lived in Eretz Yisrael. They lived there even before Esav came there. And they v'yoshvei ha'aretz. And Rashi quotes the Medrash, Rabbanotenu dashu shayu b'kiyim b'yishav shal ha'aretz. Malei kanezel ha'saitim, malei kanezel ha'gvanim. And they knew exactly, Chazal described, they would taste the earth. And they tell you, press olive, plant olives here. Plant tamarim here. Plant einim here. They could tell you they were, in other words, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, they were big experts. The early inhabitants of Seir were big experts. They were able to tell you which piece of land can be adapted for planting olives, which piece of land can be adapted for planting vines. They were big experts. When Rav Huttner arrived in America, I think it was 1932. By the way, that's wrong. Rav Huttner arrived in 35. The Rav arrived in 32. At that time, there were many experts among the non-Orthodox Jews and even among the Orthodox Jews. And unfortunately, even some great Rabbanim who were Talmidei Chachamim became Bishas. And they were experts, but these experts looked at the land of America and they felt, this land, no one can plant the seeds of Torah. America was not adapted for planting Torah. Brisk, Velazhen, Slabatka, Tells, Rotten were adapted for planting B'nai Torah. But St. Louis, Boston, Philadelphia, Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles were not fit, not for Zaytim, not for Tainim, not for Kramim. They were experts, but they were wrong. They had the wrong evaluation. You cannot plant Torah in the United States.
But he would say the same thing for his own brother.
You missed what I spoke about a few minutes ago. But Rav Huttner, from the first day that he came, because of his dedication and his fervor and his effervescence, decided there is not a piece of land on the earth that cannot be adapted for planting Torah. And he quotes the pasuk. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Perik Nun Aleph, Pasuk Tet Zayin, V'yasim Devarai B'picha, U'betzel Yadi Kisiticha, Lintoa Shamayim, V'lisod Aretz, V'lomar L'tzion Ami Ata. You'll be able to plant, you'll be able to create the heavens, the earth, the ground, the soil. You'll be able to build a beautiful spiritual world. It has to be cultivated. You have to plant, you have to sow, but you will succeed. And he gives Rav Huttner the credit that he saw America differently. You see? And if you sow many seeds on many pieces of land in New York, in New Jersey, in Lakewood, in Philadelphia, in Boston, in Los Angeles, in Chicago, in Minneapolis, and in Omaha, then some seeds will result in beautiful plantations. But it has to be l'ntoa l'shem shamayim, and it has to be with work and energy. It can't be haphazard and desolatory. And his description of Rav Huttner, second to none. And Rav Hutner, and you got to remember, this is America of 1935. RJJ, from there he goes on to Chaim Berlin, he builds the Metifta, he builds the Beit Medrash, vision. And these words are exactly echoing the Rav. Time and again, the Rav said exactly the same thing, that the Frumma Jews, the Rabbanim, among them Gedolei Yisrael, but they raised their hands. They were defeated by the American environment. Torah cannot thrive here. It's so true, and it's so accurate, and that description of Maimonides, and you can ask Yitzchak Rubin when his mother registered him for Maimonides, what did they tell your mother would become of you?
They told me I would be a ghetto Jew and I would be culturally deprived.
Here you go. I would be a ghetto Jew and culturally deprived, word
and
by word.
I didn't want to talk my mother out of sending me.
No, I just spoke.
Italy was great because Maimonides was not free.
Right.
Then you had to go and be embarrassed to talk to a scholarship committee to get a reduction in the fee.
Right.
That was not.
You know how I went up in Solanta? My mother went, and I think they settled on $5 a month, I think it was. $5 a month. That's how I wound up in Solanta.
And she couldn't afford to pay the bus fare, so I used to walk 25 minutes to school every day.
So I was lucky. I lived a 10-minute walk from Solanta. It was a miracle, mamish a miracle. I lived a 10-minute walk where Solanta had moved to. My Cindy said, You know the story of, told the story how I wound up in Solanta and how Avraham, remember Rabbi Lamb, Avraham Lamb, you know the story, my story is very simple. I was in public school and I was in Cheder. My mother always had that Jewish feeling. Out of six children, she was the only one that had that feeling. So I was in Cheder, which is a waste of time, and I was in public school, so I used to beat up the teacher. So my teacher was a Jewish woman, but I don't know if this had anything to do with her being Jewish. She said to my mother, look, your son is Jewish. Most of the kids here are Irish, Italian. He learns very quickly. He's bored. You got to put him in a parochial school where he'll have a double curriculum. So my mother heard a double curriculum, parochial school. Solanta was the only yeshiva in the Bronx. It was five blocks away. So that's how I wound up in Solanta. Avram Lamb is even a funnier story. His parents were immigrants. In other words, my parents were born in Holland, so the native language was English. But Avram's parents had emigrated from Europe, maybe in the late 20s, early 30s. So they spoke Yiddish at home. So one time, Avram is walking with his mother. He's a little kid. Maybe he was a year ahead of me. Maybe he was in first grade in public school. And he's walking with his mother. And say that in the Yiddish, then they're speaking Yiddish to each other. So Yenta, this is the absolute true story. And then Yenta walks over, she says, oh, Ayazun ret as a shame Yiddish, as a fine sprach. Your son speaks a beautiful Yiddish. His speech is so fine. So, thank you. His mother thanks to Yenta. And then the lady says, you should also learn Torah. So his mother says, I'll send him to Cheder. So she says, Cheder, Azakim, Kibasret, Azak Yiddish, Cheder is not good enough. Cheder is not good enough. So his mother says, where should I send him? And this Yenta says, there's a yeshiva down the block. He lived four blocks from Solanta. Send him to Solanta. And that's how he wound up in Solanta.
I have to say something. This is like the Rav explaining the mysterious stranger that met Yosef that told him where his brothers were.
Right.
And this mysterious stranger intervenes by Kodesh Baruch Hu in different people.
Correct.
So this Yenta, the
Yenta, I'm not making fun of the Yenta, but what can I tell you? Listen, I don't want to go any further, or Alex is going to be angry at me for not becoming a full Chabadnik. But I have to tell you, I write about this in Washington. I have no way to explain it. The night of my bar mitzvah. So we're coming back from the hall. We're bringing this beautiful cake back. Little did I dream that the persons who hauled it was and bar mitzvahed me and made a whole ceremony, I would later teach Torah to his son, who was Rabbi Tzvi Flaum of the Five Towns. That was one of my first students ever. You can check with Tzvi, his father, bar mitzvahed me. So with a whole ceremony. So I'm coming back. We're coming out of the car. This is Washington Avenue and 180th, my father's Dodge. And we're coming out holding this cake. It's my mother, my father, my brothers, my grandfather might have been with us. We're coming out of the car. And a yenta comes over, never saw her before, never saw her afterwards. And the neighborhood already was very mixed, the Jewish, Italian, Irish. A woman, no, who kommt denn da? Simchala. So my parents said, our son's bar mitzvah. So she, and she gives me a bracha. Big in Torah and here at Shemayim. I don't know who she was. So that just certifies what Yitzchak said. Okay, let me go further back to Futna, because these words are precious. See, then there's something else he says here. And you see, what made Rabbi Hutner very unique, and I'm going to come back to this at the very end, I have some real insight to say. I only hope thousands of Rabbi Hutner's Talmidim should be listening and comment on what I want to say at the very end. I'm not there yet. But what made Rabbi Hutner very unique, you see, we all grow up with a Rebbe, Rebbeim. All right, if you go to YU, then by nature, at least in my time, it was a multifaceted experience. Because I learned with the Rav, I learned with Rabbi Shmuel Lezer Volk, I learned with Rabbi Noach Bornstein, Rabbi Yerucham Gerelik, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, Rabbi Michal Katz, the Mashkiach, Rabbi David Lifshitz, the Mashkiach, Rav Lassen. It's a multifaceted experience. I added to it because as a kid I was curious. And I wound up in Lubavitch, I wound up in Satmar, I wound up in Tel Aviv Das, Chaim Berlin. I explored. I didn't take anything for granted. So, multifaceted. Today, more or less, you can go to yeshiva, and it's not multicolored anymore. It's like one type of experience if you're in a yeshiva. It has the, you're not going to run around. If you're in Panovich, you're in Panovich. If you're in Chabad, all right, Chabad has a little bit more because they also go to New York. They see a little bit more than just the local yeshiva here. But everyone is very limited. Rav Hutner had that ability that he sought out Rabbeim of all types. And here I'm quoting from Rav Aaron. The Rabbeim of Rav Hutner were Rav Moshe Epstein, the Alt of Slabatka. Sure, he learned in Slabatka. But Rav Hutner had other Rebbeim, because when Rav Hutner was yet a Talmud in Slabatka, he was accustomed to visit Rabbanim and Gedolim. And one of the ways through which he captivated my imagination as a child before Bar Mitzvah was by telling me stories about Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld. See, Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, he saw in Israel. The Steichemet yet saw and knew and heard about the Steichemet when he learned in Chevron. The Steichemet was Rabbi Chevron. I don't think he was alive anymore. But he heard stories. He talked about his grandfather, the Ishuk Rav. His name was also Hutner. Rav Hutner told me a story about a gadol that had a great impact on me. He spoke about his grandfather. In his old age, he had trouble with his eyes. The doctor told his grandfather he had to minimize his learning. He could not use his eyes. The doctor told him if he didn't minimize his learning, he might chas v'chalila become totally blind. The Ishuk Rav said to the doctor, quote, "If I cannot learn, ein lama lichayim. I have no reason to live. My wife, my life would be worthless." And here Rav Aaron says that story that he heard when he was 12 years of age left a very deep imprint on him. Rav Chutnat Men Rabbeim, he was not just the Talmud of Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, not just the Talmud of the Mashkiach, the Alta Mashkiach in Slabodka. This is how I got to know Rav Chutnat. When he arrived in Warsaw, when he came back from Chevron, my father was still in Warsaw. He came to my father, and my father started to talk and learning with him. He and my father saw the Talmid Chachamim. He started to come to my father's house every day. He used to come and my father used to talk to him in learning because he wanted to draw as much knowledge as he could out of my father. He was Shoteh Bitzama Divrei Chachamim. So he had so many Rebbeim. And that's how I met him. And then he speaks about that year he learned with Rav Chutnat in Warsaw, he also learned Mesilat Yesharim with Rav Chutnat. And Mesilat Yesharim, he quotes from the Hakdama, from Mesilat Yesharim, he named Asher Amar Shlomo in Mishlei, Im Tevakshenu Kikesef Ukekamat Monim Techapesna, Oz Tavin Yirat Hashem. If you search and seek with all your heart, then you will understand Yirat Hashem. Pasuk in Mishlei. And the Mesilat Yesharim says, Eina Oima Oz Tavin, I'm quoting the Mesilat Yesharim, Oz Tavin philosophy, Oz Tavin techuna, Oz Tavin refua, Oz Tavin dinim, Oz Tavin halachat, Ela Oz Tavin Yirat Hashem. Harei lecha shalahavin ha-yirat tzarich lerakesh ota kekesach ulechapes ota kamat monim. And what the amazing, the Mesilat Yesharim is saying, if you don't search for Yirat Shamayim, you're not going to achieve it. And the Mesilat Yesharim comments that Mishlei doesn't say that then you're going to understand mathematics, medicine, you're going to understand halacha. The main thing is to search and achieve Yirat Hashem. So the little Arala asked Rav Chutnat a question. All right, Yirat Hashem is very important. And if you don't search with all your heart, you're not going to achieve it. But look at the equation that the Baal Mesilat Yesharim makes. It doesn't say mathematics, refuah, biology, chemistry, halacha. What's going on here? That all the other subjects, including halacha, are one and the same? Mathematics, chemistry, you're making this comparison? Okay, you're at Shemayim. You have to search with all your heart, and only if you do, then you'll achieve it. But look what the Mesilat Yesharim is equating. It doesn't say, oh boy, he asked this of Rav Chutnat. And Rav Chutnat said, Sistaka Shver, this question is difficult. I don't have an answer. What a comparison. When Rav Aaron arrived in America, the first thing he did was ask his father, Rav Moshe, this very question. And Rav Moshe said to him, not difficult at all. If you don't have Yirat Shamayim, then the study of halacha, the study of shas, becomes no different than biology, than chemistry, than mathematics, than any other subject. It's a powerful thought. And that's the story I told you. Remember the story with Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, with Kamenetz, the story I told in class in the 60s, and this kid's father, who was a survivor, comes to see me, a Rav in the Bronx, another Rav in the Bronx. And remember I told you the story that Friday night they opened the door to a room without knocking. And in the room Friday night was one of the big Iluyim in Kamenetz writing Rav Baruch Ber's Sheyur up that he had just given a few minutes earlier. And wow, the story with the kids smoking. Remember in Rotten, the Eichet, the same story, kids smoking on Shabbos. And remember Slabatka, we spoke about with the Rabbi Teitz, a contemporary also smoking on Shabbos. And wow, you see, if you, kid's father came to see me, how do you know that story? How do you know? I was there, I was in Kamenetz. He couldn't believe an American gangster like myself, a Yankee fan, knew the story. Ah, absolutely so. If you treat Torah, you're no intellectual. Some people, look, Professor Albright at John, what was he in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins, was the great, he knew a Daf Gemara. What are you talking about? He was, the yeshiva boys used to go to ask for help in Gemara. How did he know Gemara? It's intellectual. It didn't make him into a tzaddik. He was a fine individual. But it's not that he davened three times a day. He was a non-Jew. But intellectual. I once was walking with Tzvi Groner, I'm walking with Tzvi Groner on Rehov Yafo, Rehov Asa, around the corner from my house. And there was a barber up the hill near Radak, a barber. I said, I don't know if he's still there. And coming out of the barbershop is someone Tzvi knows. He goes over, a guy coming out without a kippah, of Yom Kippur. And the professor, Zussman, I believe his name was, an Enikel from the Chatam Sofer, and one of the big professors of Talmud at the Hebrew U, when there was yet a big department of Chachmat Yisrael. And Tzvi tells me, you see who I was talking with? You see that? He tells me his name. He says, this man knows all of Shas, Bavli and Yerushalmi by heart. And then Tzvi pauses, and I can tell you he doesn't fast on Yom Kippur. I'll never forget. I was a newcomer. It must be 1969 or 1970. I was a newcomer to Israel. And I tell you, I was shaking. But how can he? Nenekel from the Chatam Sofer. He knew it all. All right, it's intellectual. I know Jews who know Chinese literature. So what? It's not that they govern three times a day because they have a PhD in Chinese literature. All right, that's what they're interested in. I have one grandson has a degree in robots, robotica. You understand? All right, having a degree in robotica, he works in the field. Doesn't make you into a frum Jew, but Reb Meish, excuse me. Well, he works. What can I tell you? It's a unique degree, robotica. He actually was accepted into a master's program, but he got a job offer, got married, so his wife is getting a PhD Hebrew U. So we always ask her, how does it feel having a husband who just has a bachelor's, just has the graduate bachelor's?
Did you ever hear the name Theodore
Gaster? Of course.
Theodore Gaster's father was
the Chacham in England.
Yeah, this man, Theodore Gaster's knowledge was just everything you're describing now.
Right.
The only thing is, and I studied Buddhism, Hinduism with him, and comparative religion. I didn't get, but he went off the way. He thought the whole thing was
right. He published that Hanukkah never happened, Purim never happened. Right. It's unbelievable.
He did the books that Fraser making fun of the Torah, that everything in the Torah was copied.
Ay, God have mercy, what can happen? But this is so powerful that Rav Huttner said, Stakashver? He didn't understand. And Rav Moshe says, it's Nishta Shaila, there's no question. And Rav Moshe gave him a very powerful answer. I just want to go one step further. Give me one step further. And here he tells something very, very beautiful about his relationship with Rav Huttner. This is on page 28. We owe Rabbi Yosef Halevi ben Harabaran Halevi Salvechik a big thank you for what he's published. There's a lot more here, but this is so overwhelming. When my mother was very elderly, he's talking about Rebbetzin Pesha, the Rav's mother, his mother, Pesha Feinstein Soloveitchik, I yet knew the Rebbetzin, I have a skut. I write about it in Washington, how I met the Rebbetzin. I tell my grandchildren, of course, the kids listen with one ear there in their world, you know, moving way beyond. They can't relate already to the world that I can relate, which is only natural. I can relate a little bit to their world because I also did army. See, that's a big thing. If you did army, and you know what the army's about, and Baruch Hashem, I'm lo amaretz anochi, so in a way I can relate to their world. When my mother was very elderly, she broke her hip, and she was confined to bed for several weeks. Hagon Reb Yitzchak Kutnazal came to be mevaka chayla, my mother, and he stayed for over an hour. Before he left my mother's house, Rabbi Hutner turned to me and said, Rabari, I'll say it in English, I stayed for over an hour. We were reminiscing, lethargic memories. Your mother did all the talking, and I was gazing at your mother's eyes. And don't be chosh at me that I was over chas v'shalom on the Issa of looking at women. It is a mitzvah to gaze at your mother's eyes, because your mother's eyes radiate Kedusha. And that's a beautiful description of Rav Hutner, the Rebbetzin, Rav Aaron, and what a relationship that went on from Warsaw. This little kid helped him with his bar mitzvah, comes to America, they pick up the relationship, and one interacts with the other for many, many decades. All right, we have one little bit more to go, and then I'm going to show you some fabulous other descriptions of Rav Hutner that literally catch him as he was. Rav Yitzchak Hutner, Chaim Berlin, and his accomplishment, his students, his effervescence, his liveliness, and all that goes with it. My dear students, what did we do today? We went a little bit further in Rav Hutner's life. We made an addendum as far as Bell's and Rabbi Hutner and those who succeed Rav Hutner. There's no question that evidently what happened in the late 70s, early 80s left the letter a very, very bitter taste that lasts until today. If you do go online and you pick up all the material, you notice that the Begelizen is brought into the picture as well. Lo Aleinu, these are brothers, Belzer, Chaim Berlin boys. One of the brothers, you should recognize the name, was killed in 9/11. He was on the 102nd floor, I believe, of the Twin Towers. There were all types of stories. He called his Rebbe to say he's there and he's going to die shortly. It's rumored he asked whether he can jump, and the Rebbe told him, his Rebbe, Rav Aaron Schechter, told him not to jump, that you can't kill yourself. But I want you to know, if you come up with all this material, it also ties in with me. His brother, who's also written about there, happens to be married to my student, and he's a very loyal and wonderful Talmud of mine, virtual, and comes always to hear me when I'm in the Five Towns. And that's the Begelizen family. It also ties into the whole story, and they become involved because they're half Chaim Berlin and half Bells. And how do you manage to keep both loyalties after all that happened in the late 70s, early 80s? So it's very, very fascinating. But be it as it may, we've reached, I don't think we can go any further. Whatever happened there, maybe that blogger was right, an illegitimate person got involved, and unfortunately, in the Haredi world, if you go on the websites, you see they warn the people, don't fall for quick stories, easy money, big interest. Just because a person is dressed like a Haredi doesn't mean you can trust them. And these are common sense things which we learn about in college. But even in our world, I remember there was the North American Bank here. Anyone remember the North American Bank? It went in Chula in 19. You remember, Tichado, what I'm talking about. All from people. And it turned out the bank had two divisions, a legal division and an illegal division. And if you had money in the legal division, when the bank went b'chula, went bankrupt, went under, you got back your money from the government. The government has never allowed, there's no federal insurance here, but the government has never allowed a legitimate bank to fall because the reputation of the state of Israel is at stake. They will pay you back. If you were in the illegitimate part, you lost every cent, and it became a landmark case because they made, now if I signed papers for Shvut Ami, I'm responsible. If Shvut Ami does something illegal, I can be sued. It's very different than it used to be. So the bank went under, and the head of the bank, who was a Hebron yeshiva boy, got 7 years. His assistant, who was a Gerich Hasid, got 5 years. The lady who ran the office got 3 years with a big shaitel, went to jail. I think she got out at the end of 2 years. Good behavior. And these were all from people, but you see, when you, and my friend lost his shirt, it changed his life. He's no longer alive. He had to go back to America. So people would say to him, what are you going to that bank for? He said, they're giving 10%. Yeah, but every other bank in the world is only giving 5%. It's impossible for them to give 10. Now, this is something that's axiomatic. I always tell my grandchildren, only get involved with legal banks. Don't do anything illegal, because ultimately it caves in like a deck of cards. We should know this from college, from university. Haredim don't know it. They have to tie. And even if we know it, you see, we fall into the trap, because money is attractive. Haredim, you can't blame. They see a frum guy, he's making payments, he's paying back. And you see, I read just the other day, rules to know when it comes to investment. So it could very well be that they were robbed and gypped, and the money was lost, and the land was sold a second time, and the guy simply absconded. It's maisim lo aleinu b'chol yom. When you leave the world and you have a little bit money, ma'bed ha'chasim, ma'bed ha'agat. You can't change chazal. Chazal, every word is true. The description of Rav Hutner is magnificent, and every Rebbe, if you don't have that spark, don't be a Rebbe. Don't bore your class. You see what's going on with baseball today. It takes too long. They want to change the game. If you're bored by baseball, Allah had come of a comma, you're going to have a Rebbe who's going to bore you. Liven it up. Okay. Gentlemen.
I think Torah can be a lot more interesting than baseball.
Now, Beseda. Let the, if the, if listen, if
I'd
the.
I'd rather listen to you give Shiva for 3 hours.
Alex, if the Mesillah Yesharim makes that comparison, I can make it too.
Yeah, now, I don't know if you're referring, but in Shmacha magazine 2 issues ago,
right,
there was a whole top 4 pages on a young man who invested money in a coffee machine and he lost everything. And this was all an article that warned religious people not to get involved in scams.
Right. I saw something in either Mishpacha or Ami, but I saw on a website too in Hebrew, like 1, 2, 3, 4. But the basic thing you have to know, if the world is paying right now 0.5% interest, no one can give you 5% interest. It's impossible. So you have to have a little seichel. Let me just handle the freebies. This is fascinating. Orthodox Union, don't let friends get smashed on Purim. Now, I have a problem with the picture. Here you see a frum guy, and the women next to him aren't dressed with the soap sneer stick. So what do we see here? Is that a Chabadnik being makarev his people, or what? A Broadway play came out about a rabbi who is filled with chesed. It's a beautiful play, I'm told. And it's based upon a real-life Chabad Shaluach. Here's from the Friedrich Rebbe and the seventh Rebbe, Adona, Benjamin Glaser, who had endless letters from the Riatz and afterwards from Rav Menachem Mendel, and they're auctioning them off. Very interesting picture, how they prepare it for auction. Here is about Greenblatt, what's his name? Jason Greenblatt, is it? Yeah, Jason Greenblatt, without a kippah, but at least you know he davened, he had yahrzeit, and Netanyahu made a minion for him. Here's in Yonah Diyoma, in yesterday, for the first time in the history of YU, a father and son got ordination at the same time from Teaneck, New Jersey. Here's about a shaluach, and again, the Rebbe's insight in giving him courage and what a young kid accomplishes today. He's already an older man, all because of the Rebbe's encouragement. Here is, if you know what's going on with Prime Grill and Lincoln Square Synagogue, a machlekes over money that's been going on. We're talking heavy money. Rabbi Shushechter gave a psak, but nothing has happened. Very fascinating, and you'll see that the balabas is not entirely wrong. Here's from the New York Times about the conservatives taking over the Supreme Court and about Leonard A. Leo, who's a believing Catholic. Go and find a believing Catholic today. Very prominent, a genius, and he is Trump's point man in coming up with conservative judges. And Leonard A. Leo was criticized. He actually quoted the Bible in public. Could you imagine, like here in Israel, they're criticizing a Lift Mishnah Winter that he quoted a pasuk from Yehoshua. Here's the Jewish Children's Museum of Chabad in Crown Heights being evacuated with bomb threats. Very, I didn't realize how serious, how disrupting it is, how terrible. Here's an article on a shluch who can't have children, and he's adopted three, and the third child is biracial, looks black here, negroid. And I would advise him, Kamen Aliyah, because a kid like this can grow up in Israel and be perfectly part of the crowd. In America, it's a little bit different. Here's another Chabad Shuluach who wanted to give up, tendered his resignation. He was on the west side.
I know Rabbi.
Accomplishing nothing, and the Rebbe would not accept his resignation. And as they say, the rest is Israel. Here is once again the 9/11 Broadway play about Chesed. And last night, they had a class here of how to be a good rabbi. And for those of you who are not in the class, I have four copies that were left. I looked at it, very fascinating, dealing with a problem that all of us in Chinuch, on a lower level, I suffered from this. And any mechanech, how do you get kids excited about learning Talmud?
Oh, it's from Rabbi Karlinsky.
A structured approach to the teaching of Talmud. From Rabbi Kalinsky.
He's fantastic. He's a fantastic teacher.
Baruch Hashem.
The whole methodology at Chappelle's.
Baruch Hashem.
They need to bring that whole methodology into all of the modern ideas. One of the things I like to do.
Halavai. And Kalinsky got a start in BMT. He was the Aim Habayit, the Af Habayit here, or he was in Madrid. I know him yet from the old days. I want to thank everyone for coming. Morty, do me a favor, take these gentlemen's emails. If God forbid it should ever happen again that I can't teach, I want them to be contacted. I don't want people to come and find the room empty. I had a bad bout with a viral infection.
Are the emails on the list?
Here.
Let's see who we have.
Your name, your date.
Until we meet again in health and happiness next week, Sunday, Monday, final Sheyurim until Esther Chag HaCheirut. Das v'danya.
Thank you for a nice class.